Good evening and welcome to the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission. And our first warm welcome all the commissioners this evening. And our first item of business is the minutes. Has everybody had an opportunity to read the minutes? Commissioner?
I just had one thought on my interpretation of the minutes when I asked the question about if someone had to vote, that they couldn't abstain, they could only not vote if they had a conflict of interest. And that was my question for County Council, and David O'Dell just spoke right up and said, indeed, you do have to vote yes or no on every issue unless you do have a conflict of interest. So that answered my question, but I know we did have on our list of things to do possibly having the County Council in, so that's my point of clarification on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? We have a motion.
Make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Minutes are approved with corrections. Okay, now we will open it up for a public comment. Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment. Okay, and we'd like to welcome our first guest tonight, and that would be Barry Vanderkellen, the Executive Director of the Community Foundation.
Good evening. Thank you very much for allowing me to spend a few minutes with you this evening, giving you an update on what's happening with nonprofits in San Luis Obispo County. I am Barry Vanderkellen, and I have the privilege of serving as the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation. We were formed in May of 1998 to work to improve the quality of life of all residents of the county. And one of the things that we do is we pay very close attention to what's happening in the nonprofit sector. Excuse me. So that we can continually adjust and improve our programs and services that support the nonprofits. Part of our work is to make sure that the nonprofits are working as effectively and as efficiently as possible. So I have a few slides that I'd like to walk you through just to give you an overview of what I think is happening with nonprofits in the county. And So a few fast facts about what's happening with SLO County nonprofits. There are 1,106 501c3 organizations, and that is as of last month. And these data are from the National Center for Charitable Statistics, which updates these numbers fairly regularly as they mine information from the Form 990s that nonprofits file and then do some estimates for those that don't file 990s, and I'll get to that in a moment. As you can see, that 33%, one-third of the nonprofits in San Luis Obispo County as of November last month had annual revenue less than $25,000. And the 990 is important because that is the information return that nonprofits are required to submit if they have revenue greater than $25,000. So a lot of these numbers are based from that, and as you might imagine, the larger nonprofits pull up the smaller nonprofits when we're aggregating revenues and expenses. Nonprofits in the Form 990, and this is as of last year, have total revenue of $379 million, and we're $15 million behind where we were before the Great Recession. A year ago, we were at $22 million below, so there's ever so slightly a recovery underway, but maybe not, because we had an 8% decline in revenue per nonprofit. So while we're slowly getting back to where we were before the recession, on a per nonprofit basis, we're still behind. We are seeing some recovery in that per nonprofit. Last year was about 12%, now we're at 8%, so ever so slowly, we're getting back to where we were. And so here, one of the things that people ask all the time is, how are we doing in San Luis Obispo County to all the other counties? One of the things that we hear repeatedly is San Luis Obispo County has the most nonprofits per capita of any county in the state, and I've heard in the nation, So I want to address those in very specific numbers. So in the number of nonprofits, there are 1,106, and we rank 21st of the 58 counties in California. So, and the number of nonprofits per county resident, we're 18th. So we're not the most, we're not the least, we're 18th. The number of nonprofits with annual revenue greater than $25,000, we're 26th. And in those less than $25,000, we're 33rd. So I want to come back to that in just a moment. The total revenue for nonprofits, we're 30th, and the total revenue per nonprofit, we're 38th. So when we look at the number of nonprofits with annual revenue greater than $25,000, we look at that over time, we're seeing that there are more nonprofits in San Luis Obispo County that have revenue greater than $25,000. Now, there's two explanations for that, and we don't know what the real reason is. The first explanation is that the IRS has been really getting serious and has started automatically decertifying organizations that haven't been in compliance with their filings with the IRS. In 2009, nonprofits were required, every nonprofit was required to do an annual filing. Excuse me. If they had revenue greater than $25,000, they had to file a 990 form. If they had revenue less than $25,000, they had to at least submit an annual postcard to let the IRS know that they're still active. And if you miss 3 years, the IRS will decertify the organization. So we're seeing some cleanup going on for the organizations that aren't keeping up with their compliance with the IRS. The other explanation, which I think we're going to be able to see in the next few years, is that the nonprofit sector, the individual organizations, are growing stronger. I think that I'm estimating that we are seeing a local culture of philanthropy really starting to take root. And we've been working on this for decades, but we're able to track this in terms of the revenue and the number and these sorts of statistics. So those two explanations, what's going on has two explanations. I think there's a real reason, and I think there's an even more positive reason that we'll be able to tease out in the next few years. And the reason why I say we'll be able to tease that out in the next few years is because this IRS cleanup hasn't been in place all that long. So the longer that's in place, the more we'll be able to really understand why we're seeing some of the things happening with the individual nonprofits. The other thing, though, is that we really do need a strong local culture of philanthropy. Because if we're 30th in the state for all the counties in the total revenue to nonprofits, and we're 38th in the amount of revenue per organization, we have a long way to go. We are not 30th and 38th in terms of population. So we have a long way to go in really making sure that the nonprofits have the resources they need to do their important work. When we look at the James Irvine Foundation in the mid-90s, released an important study of foundations, the private foundation grant making in the state of California. And what they found were the large funders were heavily concentrated in the San Francisco Bay Area and in the Los Angeles metropolitan area. And so were the grant making from those organizations. When we look at the major funders in the Los Angeles metropolitan area, they go through Santa Barbara County and they stop at the county line. They do not come into San Luis Obispo County. When we look at the major funders in the San Francisco Bay Area, they come through Monterey County and they stop at the San Luis Obispo County line. So we are in this donut hole where we do get money from the Irvine Foundation, the California Endowment, et cetera, but the real action is not coming to San Luis Obispo County because of our geography. So that's another reason why we really need a strong local culture of philanthropy. So I thought this was kind of interesting when I look at, so if we have the number of nonprofits per county resident, and don't worry about that calculation on the right-hand side, but what we did was we took the number of nonprofits per person, so the number of people into the nonprofits, and came up with this number. What's important is that we're not that far behind San Francisco, which has twice, three times the population, that we're tied with Santa Cruz and with Napa, and we're a little bit ahead of Santa Barbara. But you look at Alameda County, one of the most populated counties in the state, and we're actually ahead in terms of the number of nonprofits per county resident. Now, this somewhat contradicts what I just said. However, what we're seeing is that there is a lot of people that are coming together around a cause and trying to address that unmet need in the community, and that's something we really do need to celebrate. So when we look at the sources of revenue from nonprofits in San Luis Obispo County, this is the most recent data available, and that's from November of 2009. And we can see that the largest portion comes from program services and contracts, about 45%. This is primarily governmental agencies outsourcing the work to the nonprofits. And that is a very efficient thing to do because the cost structure is very different. And the dollars can be leveraged by charitable contributions. So for government agencies to be in partnership with nonprofits is a very efficient use of tax dollars. And for nonprofits in San Luis Obispo County, we're seeing that it is a major source of revenue. So as government agencies continue to cut back on their funding, those programs and services need to be provided somehow. So the second largest source of revenue is from contribution gifts and grants at 43%. And that number is actually rising. So people are seeing the need and the value of keeping local dollars addressing local issues. One of the things I want to point out is that so many nonprofits rely on special events, but in reality, special events only provide about 1% of the revenue to nonprofits in the big picture. So so the special events have a purpose beyond fundraising. And so special events are very helpful to nonprofits because they raise awareness and they attract attention to the cause. And so while in the end, they don't provide that much revenue to nonprofits, they're very important for public relations and for image awareness reasonings. So to the extent that we can support the nonprofits in having effective special events, all the better. But the big lesson from this pie chart for nonprofits is special events aren't going to get the job done. There has to be a diversified revenue mix. Now, I don't need to, I'll just make this passing comment that's self-evident for investment income. It's significantly lower than before the recession, but so is everyone else's 401k. So I think that's pretty obvious. So is there a recovery? Well, government funding continues to erode. There's more unmet need. Similarly, the persistent high unemployment rate means that there are people needing more and more services. The weakened charity workforce, the number of employees are down. Something like 50% of the nonprofits self-reported that they laid off staff in the recession and that recovery hasn't happened yet. The overextended workers are burning out. We're seeing more turnover in staff positions, and volunteers are very helpful, but they do cost money. Two-thirds of the volunteers don't come back because they don't feel like they've had enough supervision and training, and the nonprofits need to figure out a way to pay for that supervision and training so that the volunteers can augment the work of the organization. And then finally, consumer confidence must increase, and we are starting to see that. There's something very interesting going on that's hard to track, but there's a number of things going on that I think is very interesting. Consumer confidence is up 15 points, which is we are headed dramatically in the right direction. And so I'm holding out hope that we're going to have a very good giving season to the nonprofits, the fall giving season. The annual gifts are tied tightly to consumer confidence. People feel like they can replace that money, and we're seeing consumer confidence going up. Now, this is despite the ongoing recession, despite all the shenanigans in Washington, D.C. and Sacramento, but there's something interesting going on. And so I'm holding out hope that we're going to have a good giving season. I went to the economic forecast for San Luis Obispo County, the takeaway from the local forecast was if everybody, for-profits and nonprofits, can get through 2012, we'll be breathing easier in 2013. That's what the economist said, and I'm paraphrasing, so I'm not doing justice there. But the point is there's a very slow, almost imperceptible recovery going on that if we can just hang in there, it will get better, And I think we're seeing that in the consumer confidence, that people are starting to feel like either they've adjusted to the reality or they're starting to see things get a little bit better. We had a really good jobs report last month, we can only hope that it keeps going. But donors continue to restrict their dollars rather than give unrestricted dollars. There's a lack of confidence or a distrust that their money is actually going to be used for impactful ways. And that's a problem for the nonprofits, because we know from the research, the National Center for Charitable Statistics, Compass Point, I could go on, have done the research on operating costs of nonprofits, and they're finding that it does cost money to run an effective nonprofit, and people are afraid. You know, donors don't like overhead. Nonprofits are afraid to talk about overhead. But those that have solid administrations are the best run, and we do know that the best run nonprofits engender confidence and attract donors. So those are a few comments about what's happening in the nonprofit sector, and I'm happy to address any questions you may have. But just to touch base with you about the Community Foundation, you know, we are a public trust established to assist donors in building an enduring source of charitable funds to meet the changing needs and interests of the community. We were founded in May of 1998. As of 12/31 a year ago, in 2010, we had assets of $31 million, and we've made grants totaling more than $16 million. We feel like we are really adding value to the quality of life of the county. And so with that, I'd be happy to address any questions you might have. Yes.
Barry, I saw last week an article in the Tribune that was not very complimentary on the percent of dollars that go from our contributions to the actual charity. In fact, it painted a pretty negative picture in terms of the amount of money that marketing organizations were taking as a result of their efforts. And I know you spoke to the fact that you need some overhead, but this article was, the percents were very high, and I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Yes, that was a article that was written by California Watch from the Center for Investigative Reporting. And that article focused on 13 nonprofits and their relationship to professional fundraising firms. There are over 107,000 nonprofits in the state of California. So let's keep that in perspective, that that article is looking at 13. Now, there are maybe three things I'd like to say about it. One is there are some disreputable fundraising firms out there. I mean, what they do, I consider to be a fraud. But in the eyes of the law, it's a private contract between the nonprofit and the fundraising firm. So there are ways to really tease that out when somebody asks you for a donation by telephone or in person, that you are interested in the cause, but you never heard of it before. And that is to ask, what's the relationship between the solicitor and the organization? They have to disclose that. Secondly, how much does it cost to raise a dollar? They have to disclose that. And then you can get into certain things regarding the contract, including such things as, have you guaranteed a certain amount of money to the nonprofit, and what will happen to anything that is raised in excess of that guarantee? And so that information you can tease out. But what I would suggest, beyond just that kind of inquisition, is to, if you're interested in the cause, to call the nonprofit and talk with them, because they will answer your questions quite freely. Secondly, most of the fundraising firms, like I said, are reputable, and they actually add real value to the organization. The organization is stronger at the end of the contract than before. The third thing I'd say is, tying the two together, it really is a caveat emptor. The donor needs to take responsibility for his or her donation and just not make it somebody else's fault if it goes wrong.
Okay, thank you.
Barry, are you aware at all about the Literacy Council? Because the articles I've read, it sounds like they're just really almost going to dissolve, and they really perform essential service in our community. So are you aware of their current status?
I am aware of their current status. My wife for 3 years was one of the tutors, and so I saw it from the inside out through her eyes. Secondly, I am aware of it because I'm friends with members of the board and certainly know Bernadette Bernardi, and it's a very good organization. It provides a very valuable service. Its funding mechanism, though, is really challenged right now, and I think the organization is trying to figure out how to stabilize the organization and really move it forward in these incredibly challenging times. They're heavily dependent on the work of the legislature in Sacramento, and that's not a good position to be in.
Yes, thanks for coming to talk to us, Barry. I've got questions about the money. You mentioned about donors putting restrictions on money that they donate, but that's just for operating expenses, say, for a nonprofit, right?
Well, the restrictions are that it's going to be used for a particular person rather than or a purpose rather than at the discretion of the board of directors of the organization.
If someone wants to set up an endowment, can they put restrictions on what the money is invested in?
That's very difficult because, you know, what's going to happen 20 years from now? And so, you know, I can just imagine in the 1880s and the 1890s, somebody setting up an endowment and saying it will only be invested in railroads. Well, in the 1880s and the 1890s, railroads were the thing. Now, not so much. And so to put those sorts of restrictions on is very difficult. However, people are saying, I do not want my money invested in tobacco, firearms, alcohol, pornography, the sins. And that is a little bit easier to accommodate. We've actually had a request from a donor not to invest in companies that support terrorism. That's very difficult. And what he was pointing to was there was a German subsidiary of General Electric that got caught sending some proprietary and protected technology to a rogue state. Well, that subsidiary provided less than 10% of the revenue to General Electric's overall company. So is the overall company tainted by that subsidiary? And then what do we do about Dole Foods that hires local people to protect the fields? They hire gangs to protect the fields so that they can grow their crops and harvest their crops. So when you get into those sorts of things, it gets a little difficult.
One of the things I had in mind is, for example, we're trying to fight homelessness, and someone might say they wouldn't want their money invested in a certain bank because they're foreclosing on people and making them homeless. That would be one example of what I was thinking of.
So, you know, that might be a little bit easier depending on, you know, the relationship between the nonprofit and the investment advisors. Because if the fund is small enough, it'll go into a mutual fund with no leverage at all to say you will not do XYZ bank or you will not do XYZ company. If it's larger, then there is some influence to be able to say that.
So how many people do you have in your organization that are working with endowments?
Well, to a certain extent, we all are. But the board of directors, a 15-person board of directors, and we recruit from throughout the county, they're responsible for the endowment. And we have a finance and investment committee that monitors it regularly. We use the consulting services of a group that specializes in community foundations from UBS. We do not use any UBS products. And then the staff, our finance staff and myself, we're paying attention to it a lot. So if we look at it that way, we're looking at 24, 27 people that are making sure that the endowment is on track.
And then if I heard you correctly, if someone wanted to set up a small endowment, did you just say it would be put into some sort of fund? So in other words, you're not tracking individual stocks. It would be invested in a fund.
Well, there's two parts to that answer, and one is if you give the money to the nonprofit probably will only be able to access mutual funds. If you give it to something larger like the Community Foundation, then we get into institutional managers that are different than mutual funds, then there is a little bit more control, a little bit more influence over how that money is invested.
And I think my final question would be, what organizations that you know of, nonprofits, are actually getting people into housing in this county?
Well, so we know that Prado Day Center has a screening, social work screening, and trying to channel people into stable housing. People's self-help housing is making those units available. Family Care Network is working with the transition age, the emancipated foster youth, to make sure that there is stable housing for those people. I know that ECHO has a screening function. The Five Cities Homeless Coalition is building that in the Five Cities area. At the Community Foundation, we have a program called Fast Forward Home. And when somebody is screened at the Prado Day Center, that they are able to be employed, have a stable job, they're able to hit their savings targets, we match their savings with a grant that accelerates their aggregation of first and last month rent or whatever is needed to get into stable housing. So we are helping the people at Prado Day Center to get folks into stable housing. One of the things that we're facing, like everyone else, is are there enough units available for the price? You know, folks that are coming off the street can't afford the high-end rentals, can't afford the high-end purchases. Do we have enough? And that's why we need places like People's Self-Help Housing and Transitions Mental Health, the Housing Trust Fund, in order to create that supply so that more people can take advantage of it.
Thank you.
I have a question, and when I noticed in here that per capita we have more nonprofits than Santa Barbara County, and yet having been involved in Santa Barbara County, it seems like they're much more well off with the number of foundations and the amount of spending probably per capita. Could you address that in how Santa Barbara did that, and do you see that kind of a pattern beginning to happen here in our county, that we may have more local foundations?
Santa Barbara is really, has been a destination for old money for many, many years. Mm-hmm. The Santa Barbara Foundation, the Community Foundation of Santa Barbara County, is celebrating its 60th anniversary, and we're celebrating our 13th. So there's been, a stronger culture of philanthropy, especially in Santa Barbara and in Montecito. I think what we're seeing is that people are coming to San Luis Obispo County, and what we're working on is making sure they understand that this is where they live now, and they need to invest in where they live. We're not seeing a growth in private foundations. But we are seeing people who are coming in with money, and slowly we're going to get them to understand that this is where they live, and it's great to support where you came from, but this is where you live now, and it's really important that they think about this as being home. In Santa Barbara County, it's being overwhelmed by the needs in Santa Maria. Santa Maria has over 100,000 in population, and the problem in Santa Barbara County is that the money is in Santa Barbara and Montecito. The huge needs are in Santa Maria, and that's 60 miles, 50 miles. Psychologically, it's 1,000 miles. And so all the funders and all the nonprofits headquartered in Santa Barbara are really trying to figure out Santa Maria.
Yeah. Okay. Also, I don't know if you or Rick would address this, but with all the state with ASH and CMC and all of those, how does the charitable programs through those organizations work for people that are employed?
Can I punt that? I'm going to let Rick talk about that.
Okay. Any other questions here for Barry? Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, and now we will have our next speaker, Rick London.
Good evening. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Rick London, and I am a CEO of United Way of San Luis Obispo County. And just to California State Employee Campaign is where a lot of the fundraising happens at Atascadero State Hospital and California Men's Colony. And that's a program that's been going on for 20-some-odd years, and it's It's regulated by the Victim Compensation Board through the state of California. And Cal Poly has the same program. And employees are asked to make donations. United Way administers that program. And donations through the state employee giving program are actually down. We think they're stabilizing. There were a lot of furloughs that are starting to taper off. Remains to be seen where that goes, obviously. But that's basically how the employees give through that program. Let's see. I'm not sure what I push here. Oh, there we are. Was it? Oh, how nice it wasn't me. Dr. Bornstein asked that I would give you an overview of some of our programs. I'm going to have a little few, not as many numbers as Barry did, so more pictures. Yeah, I'm trying. So just a brief background on what United Way is. Everybody's heard of United Way. A lot of folks aren't sure what we do. United Way, we're volunteer-led. We have a independent board. We're local. Our money stays local. And we're addressing root causes, inspiring hope, creating opportunities for a better tomorrow. And our mission is to improve lives by mobilizing the caring power of our community. Actually, the wheel seems to work. United Way actually began in 1887. I'm fond of saying, I'm fond of asking people if they heard about the rabbi, two ministers, and a priest. There was actually a woman involved too, and this happened in Denver, Colorado, and it was when they realized they could increase their organized capacity to care for one another that began the United Way movement. Our United Way began in 1958, and actually we encompass not only San Luis Obispo County but Santa Maria and Lompoc until the mid-'80s when we split off. And then actually... Community Foundation was helpful with through the Irvine Foundation. We looked at getting together again a couple of years ago through a merger, and our individual boards decided there were so many cultural differences between Santa Maria and San Luis Obispo that we decided to stay separate. We're actually collaborating a lot more as a result of that effort and working very closely together. In 1973, United Way formed an ongoing partnership with the National Football League. 1974 marked the $1 billion mark for the United Way movement in fundraising. In 2008, we launched the Live United campaign, which you may have heard. And then in 2009, United Way of America merged with United Way International to form United Way Worldwide. Today, there's 1,800 individual local autonomous United Ways operating in 41 countries and territories. Evolution of the United Way movement. Not everybody knows we were once the community chest. We actually are in some parts of the country. Funding community partners, meeting basic needs. Often little change, though, in social structure deficits. From that, Community Impact Fund, funding programs, increasing focus on capacity building, learning how to fish, and greater accountability for results. And then we have a difficult... services. Growing three focus. Vitality. And healthcare. families that are get it. Public awareness. Oriented. financial literacy. Important to be understand. And it personally, to saved where it used to be. And now we've been program. The requested. This program. Partnership. Important.
And so
where going to and
be
how do you thousand. knows how to look.
Coming in to speak.
Is a It's become
tornado.
Incorporated. Profit community. And how to
on to you.
Went to the meeting. Children. You probably all. To appeal. Board of Supervisors. Why the So
for the oral health. Health-related.
Meetings. Applications.
Sorry.
Was this
more information? protocol.
As if it's